When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk to you for a second here about Canva, specifically Canva presentations that are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation. So start designing today at Canva.com. Design for work. Just go to Canva, CANVA.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark with Charles W. Chuck Bryant and Jerry over there, and this is Stuff You Should Know. And we're going to mind our P's and Q's because this is a family show. So everybody, don't get all excited like we're going to drop the S word or anything like that.
Snacks.
Or not. Yes. She just said it.
Oh.
We're going to keep it clean. But we are talking about some dirty, dirty stuff, stuff that should never be uttered by anyone. And I, for one, would like to tip my hat to Tipper Gore for being an American hero of all time.
What?
Actually, it's funny. As I was reading some of this, and this is, we're talking about the PMRC, as everyone will soon find out.
Yeah.
And Ed put this one together. And he points out that, yes, if you look at this, the stuff that they were trying to do, the Parents Music Resource Center, they were basically saying, like, we need to be able to have a heads up that this record album has lyrics on it that we wouldn't want our little 8-year-old kid to listen to.
Yeah.
That's really all we're asking for.
Well, that's not true, though.
The thing is that's not all they were asking for.
Yeah.
And it's a slippery slope of doing that where you're basically ringing the dinner triangle for anybody who's got a beef with any dirty lyrics or any worldview that opposes theirs to come out and say, yeah, I like that idea. And while we're at it, let's put them in jail if they don't comply. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But it's too late. The cat's out of the bag. And this all happened in real life in the 80s, which, by the way, I'm on record as saying the 70s were the greatest decade of all time.
Yeah.
I think the 80s were one of the most interesting, at least.
Yeah.
A lot of wacky stuff went down in the 80s. You got the Satanic Panic.
Yeah.
The whole backmasking thing that was kind of part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this. A bunch of other stuff happened in the 80s, too. Space shuttle program was going pretty strong. There was a shuttle disaster, even. I mean, like, it was an interesting, provocative decade.
Yeah.
So there you have it, Chuck. There's the intro.
Yeah, this is... This was a commissioned piece because I remember very distinctly all of this going on.
Sure.
When I was younger and paying pretty close attention as a music fan,
mm-hmm.
What was happening, and not getting as a kid that it meant more than an explicit lyrics label.
Right.
You know, there was more at stake.
But also as a kid, you probably were exclusively like, hey, man, they can't do that. That's not cool. That's censorship, without understanding the nuance of that. The other position as well, right?
No, I was too young to spout soapboxy things like that.
Right, so you're just like flipping off like newspaper pictures of Tipper Gore in your bedroom?
No, I mean, I was little. I mean,
how old were you?
I was like 11 or 12. I wasn't a discerning reader of the newspaper. Uh-huh. I didn't know who Tipper Gore was.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Were you? Yeah, I knew who Tipper
Gore
was.
You were like 8 years old and you knew who Tipper Gore was?
Yeah. I mean, she was on like Donahue and all of these shows. Like, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
She was the face of this whole thing. Yeah, I knew who Tipper Gore was. I'm not to imply that I was any more discerning than you were as far as reading newspaper.
I mean, I knew her name, but I certainly had no idea who she was or what any of this meant at that age.
Well, some people say knowing her name and by proxy her husband's name was the whole point of all this, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, so the Parents Music Resource Center... well, I mean, it was sort of an extension of the grand tradition of adults saying that new music is bad for kids.
Sure.
And that's been happening since there's been music.
Yeah.
It still goes
on today.
What's
this chamber music, Amadeus?
Maybe.
It's quite possible. I mean, we should do an episode just on that. I'm being threatened with getting old.
Threatened by youth?
I guess.
Yeah.
But I think it's you're projecting onto youth where you're really threatened by your imminent mortality is what it is. Yeah, and you're just projecting it onto the next generation because it's weird and strange and you're being pushed out of control.
Well, we can find the origins of the PMRC in this case. In 1984, when Tipper Gore's daughter, I think she was 11, turned on her new Prince album. Mm-hmm. And the song, a very awesome song, Darling Nikki, came on with the very famous line about masturbation. And I remember being a young church kid thinking like, whoa, I probably shouldn't be listening to this.
Yeah.
It was a dirty, dirty song.
Did you keep listening?
Yeah, because it's a great song.
It is a great song.
Yeah.
And if you put it even further, it's a great song on its own. But in context with the movie Purple Rain, that song shows up because Prince is trying to humiliate his girlfriend, who he's just struck because he found out that she was working for Morris Day, which is Prince's rival in Purple Rain.
Right.
So, like, it's a song to humiliate her, right? On its own, it's a great song. It is a racy song, but it also has context that Tipper Gore didn't have at her fingertips when she listened to that song.
Yeah, and she wrote a book a few years after that. And I don't remember. I didn't own this book.
You didn't read that book when you were 11? I read it when I was 8.
No, I was 16 by this point. But I remember I had it for some reason. I might have done some sort of school thing on this.
On the PMRC, whole thing?
Yeah, because I definitely had a copy of this book, and it wasn't like because I was like, this is great and awesome. Like, I read it for some school project.
Huh.
But it was called Raising PG Kids in an X-Rated Society. And in it, she talks about how not only was she worried and afraid for her kids, but she was afraid herself about just these images that she was seeing on MTV,
mm-hmm.
and Ozzy Osbourne crawling out of a swamp, mm-hmm. as a swamp beast.
Right.
And instead of laughing at that, like everyone else on the planet,
sure,
it scared her.
Or just taking it as part of your formative years that you eventually grow out of and don't do aren't brought to worship or hail Satan as a result.
Yeah, because she was a drummer. I mean, she was a musician.
All-woman band called the Wildcats.
Yeah, so she, I don't know, it's kind of, a lot of this is surprising.
It is very surprising, and it's not like she was, you know, just...
And a Democrat.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so here's the thing. From what I've seen, if you were on the industry side of this, the opposing side to the PMRC...
Yeah.
At the time, you were pretty convinced, and I think some people still are, that the whole thing, that yes, Tipper Gore was like, oh, this is terrible. I can't believe I listened to this with my 11-year-old, and said something to some other people she was friends with around Washington, and they were like, you know, we should do something about this. It would probably help Al's exposure to the nation and get him ready for a run at the presidency, and that was actually like this, the impetus for this whole quagmire was to make Al Gore a prominent national figure.
Oh, really?
That's what a lot of people think this
Interesting.
Was.
Interesting. I never heard that.
And whether that was Tipper and Al's idea or whether they were kind of led into it,
right,
depends on, you know, who you are. But that's very much out there in the zeitgeist that was the whole basis of this entire thing.
Huh. Well, I don't buy that. And in fact, at the pre-PMRC, in Cincinnati, Ohio, there was a school PTA group, the Delshire Elementary School PTA,
mm-hmm.
who also heard Darling Nikki and also didn't think that it was just a great jam. And they got all up in arms about it and drafted a statewide association letter that basically said, hey, Recording Industry Association of America, we're just going to call it the RIAA probably on this show, but... maybe you should have a voluntary system of ratings, kind of like movies do with the MPAA. What's the big deal?
Right. And they're like, call us back. We want to talk about it. And the IRAA never called them back.
Yeah. They said, we'll get right on that.
Yeah, exactly. Because they don't, they want to do that. They were scared of this idea to begin with. They were really worried it was going to hurt sales. If you have like an album that specifically says this is not for kids, there are some stores in some parts of the country that just won't carry that album. And you want to be able to sell those albums. You want to either have albums that a store would be happy to sell, or at least slide it in underhandedly so the stores don't know what they're selling.
Yeah.
And just the kids do. So they were afraid of this kind of idea. But they also, I mean, it's the music industry in the 80s. Like, they could afford to be like, be quiet, Cincinnati school district. We're not listening to you.
For sure.
When Tipper Gore came into the mix with some of her friends from Washington, the dynamics of it changed for a number of reasons, not just because they were connected to government, but because the RIAA and government specifically had something going on.
Yeah, so they formed the PMRC in, on May 15th, 1985. They got a grant from Mike Love of the Beach Boys, which is just further cements him as one of the leading jerks in the history of music.
So why is he a jerk? Because I saw that and I was like, why was Mike Love doing that? And I know he wasn't the Manson one. That was Dennis, wasn't it? The one who hung out with the Manson family for a little while?
That was Dennis Wilson.
Okay.
Drummer, yeah.
Why is Mike Love a jerk?
Because God made him that way.
Okay, he's just that way?
No, I mean, he's a notorious, I mean, I can't use words that I want to use, but he is a, just Google Mike Love jerk.
Okay.
And go down the rabbit hole of stories about this guy.
Does he yell like at basketball players courtside and stuff like that kind of jerk?
No, he's just, you just go read some articles.
All right, fine,
he's just,
I'm going to.
He's just a jerk.
I wish I had already.
So it does not surprise me that he gave $5,000 to kick off the PMRC. But what you were talking about is the tape tax, which was very interesting at the time. The recording industry was suffering, or not suffering, but they were just beginning to struggle a bit with the fact that cassette tapes were pretty inexpensive.
Yep.
Or they could be super cheap if you got really cruddy ones.
Yeah, but the neon see-through ones, those were expensive. The Maxells?
Yeah, I had the black Maxells.
But do you remember like the see-through ones that had like kind of fluorescent and neon colors to them?
No.
Like the kind that Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen find in Men at Work?
No, I haven't seen that either.
Oh, they're great. You never saw Men at Work?
No.
It's a good one.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so people were, you know, if you grew up in the 80s, you made tapes. You recorded stuff off the radio. You made mixtapes. If your friend had a tape, you would dub that tape.
Yep.
You would set it in front of your speaker and record your albums.
Do you remember figuring out how to record tapes that had been made so you couldn't record them? There was like a way that you could break off a tape. There were like these two things, and if they were broken off.
Well, there were two tabs on top. Yeah.
Right. If they were broken off, then they couldn't be either recorded from or recorded onto. I can't remember.
It means you can't record over what's there. So if you make a tape you really wanted to keep, you'd snap those tabs off.
Oh, is that what they were for?
Yeah.
Okay. But you could put tape over those things and fool whatever sensed them, and that you could record right over it again.
That's right.
But do you remember being a kid and wondering if you were going to get in trouble for recording a song from the radio, like knowing that you were in some gray legal area that you weren't quite sure about?
I never.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't worry about it.
I worried about getting in trouble for it. Not from my parents, because they clearly didn't care, but my local law enforcement officers, government, maybe.
You've seen War Games.
Yeah.
You know,
they'll come to your house.
They'll come to your house and pull you out of your upstairs bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So the tape industry, the cassette tape industry, was putting a dent in record sales, and they were really threatened by it, and basically went to Congress and said, hey, listen, I'd like you to pass an act, the Home Audio Recording Act, that puts a pretty heavy tax on these cassettes, on these tape-to-tape decks that everyone's buying these days, and then we want all that money.
Like hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
And the music industry was like, and we've got a great system worked out. 10% of all that is going to go to all the artists. And then 90% is going to go to the record labels.
Yeah, some things never change.
Right. So they had this thing. It was a House bill, H.R. 2911. And it was in the Commerce Committee.
Yeah.
And the Commerce Committee was going to decide whether the RIAA got this tax money, a special tax just for the music industry, to kind of offset some of these perceived album sale losses. That same committee, the Commerce Committee, the Commerce Committee, also was decided to hold a hearing on the PMRC and its desire to start labeling records as explicit.
So was, I mean, that was a senatorial hearing. Was that the Commerce Committee specifically?
Yes.
Okay, because I thought the conflict was the fact that members of the PMRC were married to people on that committee. I didn't know that that was an actual Commerce Committee hearing.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't have been because it was HR 2911. So that would have been – the Commerce Committee then would have been in the House. And you're right. This was a Senate hearing. So, yeah, no conflict whatsoever. It's totally fine.
Well, like I said, the conflict was the fact that four members of the PMRC were married to congressmen.
Right. So there was a conflict there. Basically, the record industry wanted something from Congress, and Congress – now all of a sudden wanted something from the record industry, which was to label their records as potentially offensive to whomever.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal. And some people say that if the record industry hadn't been greedy and wanted the HR 2911 out of Congress, they probably would have fought this tooth and nail. And a lot of people in the industry stood up and said, we're not going to take it,
yeah,
which will make a lot more sense in a couple of minutes. And pushed back and like did a lot of media tour and did a lot of interviews and spoke out about this and rallied like their listeners to say like, this is wrong. And they may have successfully fought it had the industry ultimately wanted HR 2911 to pass, this tape tax to pass. And so they decided that they were going to play ball.
Yeah, and this was before the very famous hearing even happened. 19 record labels got on board and said, yeah, we'll do this. We'll figure out a good system. Mm-hmm. And so the very famous hearing on September 19th, 1985, with a strange collection of humans, John Denver, Frank Zappa, and Dee Snider of Twisted Sister, it was moot at that point.
So before we get into the hearing, and we got to back up a little bit, let's take a break real quick. You want to?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back, everybody. Don't go anywhere. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go, because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Chuck, so we should say, I got to amend something I just said. I can't believe this. This is so dumb. It's possible the record industry would have fought this a lot harder than they did had that tape tax not been in existence
right.
as a proposed bill. But that's not to say necessarily that they did, because we got to give a little more background on the PMRC and what they did. One of the things that they were able to do because of their connections and because of their visibility was a media blitz.
Yeah.
Over just a handful of months, they went from meeting in a church in Washington, D.C. I think there were originally like 9 members or something, to being on Donahue, the Today Show, editorials across the country. They made this a topic of national. They made a national conversation about explicit lyrics on albums and whether the recording industry should do something about it. Overnight, they yeah. made it a thing. So as a result of that, legislation in state, among the states, started to pop up saying, forget whether the federal government's going to do it or not. We can do this ourselves. If you want to sell that record here in our state, you have to put a label on it. And I think there are at least a dozen states over a very brief period of time that came up with legislation, proposed legislation for this. So the RIAA would have had a hard time of fighting this off once the cat was out of the bag from the PMRC.
Yeah.
They could have still tried to fight it. The ACLU was like, we're waiting right here, you guys. Yeah. Go ahead and pass one and see what happens.
Yeah.
But it still would have been just a huge, enormous problem. So the PMRC did start this, and some of the states took it up. So whether it was just the tape tax or not, or whether it was to try to stem off this legislation, the RIAA said, okay, we'll play ball. And like you said, they said, okay, we'll do this. And then they still held that Senate hearing, which I think goes to further the idea that this was meant to bolster Al Gore's image, because he was on that Senate hearing.
Yeah. So what the PMRC called for it was 4 explicit tags, rated X, and just, you know, they kind of followed the MPAA's example mm-hmm. of movie ratings,
which we did a great episode on that too.
Yeah, that was a good one. Rated X for explicit sex or foul language, mm-hmm. DA for drugs or alcohol, V for violence, O for occult, which meant anything that's not, you know, good, strong Christian values, mm-hmm. anything weird. And so to illustrate this, they trotted out what is now known as the Filthy 15.
Yep.
And I think we should go through these.
Oh, yes.
It's a list of 15 songs and what they were tagged for.
We can't say all the titles.
Darling Nikki, of course, was tagged for sex.
At the top of the list, from what I understand.
Oh, yeah?
I think this is the accurate list, and I think like it may have been in some sort of order.
Oh, I don't think they were ranked as like, this is the dirtiest of them all.
I don't know. This is the one that got Tipper.
Sheena Easton's Sugar Walls. Mm-hmm. You remember that tune?
No, and I went back and listened. And
Jerry's nodding.
And I didn't recognize it at all.
Yeah, this was her big image change song, because she was sort of not all American, because she wasn't American, but, you know, just sort of that clean image.
Sure.
And then she came out with Sugar Walls.
Sure.
And everyone's like, you know what that's about, right?
Sheena Easton knows about sex. Oh, my God.
Judas Priest, Eat Me Alive.
Okay.
That's sex and violence.
Depending on who you're talking to, but all right. if it's consensual sex and violence, then is it really violent?
I haven't heard a bunch of these, actually. Strap On Robbie Baby from Vanity. I've never heard that one.
I haven't either.
But I can guess what it's about.
Sure.
Motley Crue's song Bastard.
For violence and language.
I didn't know the song, but I looked up the lyrics. It is a rape revenge song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's about a woman like killing a man who tried to rape her.
That raises a really good point here, Chuck. And we'll get into this a little more, but I just want to point this out to everybody listening right now. I can't wait any longer. Uh-huh. One of the great things about the PMRC is that they provided endless amounts of entertainment to people who were opposed to them by grossly misinterpreting the lyrics of songs.
Yeah.
And that's a really good example.
Yeah, for sure. And there are a few examples of that. AC/DC's Let Me Put My Love Into You.
I think that's sweet.
It's a song about love. Let me put my love into you.
Yeah. Open your heart to my love.
Twisted Sister's We're Not Going to Take It, which it says violence for that. That is hysterical because there's nothing violent in that song.
Not at all. And
zero.
Dee Snider at the Senate hearings was like, apparently somebody saw the video and...
With the guy from Animal House?
Yeah, and mistook this cartoonish violence. If you want to know, this was... I collect cartoons, and every single one of those acts of violence was taken from some of my favorite cartoons of all time.
Yeah.
So then there's nothing in the song.
No.
So what are you talking about here? Why would there be an explicit lyrics warning on my album when there's no explicit lyrics?
Yeah.
And it's cartoonish violence in the video.
Yeah.
But this was on the list of 15 that they used to say this is a good example of what's going on in the music industry.
I read a good interview with him. It was like 30 years on about the PMRC.
Yeah, I read that too.
And he said who they really wanted was Vince Neil. Because Vince, it was a party guy and not super articulate, and it would have been a bloodbath.
Did they confuse them because they looked similar? Or?
No. I mean, I don't think they accidentally got Dee Snider, but he said that's kind of who they wanted was Vince Neil. Mm-hmm. But what they got instead was me, who Dee Snider very famously didn't drink or smoke or do drugs, mm-hmm. was a very articulate, kind of well-spoken family man.
Yep.
And he throws a little shade to the Gores way, and he's like, I'm still married. Mm-hmm. And the Gores are separated, and one of their kids was busted for drugs. Mm-hmm. And, like, he was even nice about it now. He's like, look, marriage is hard. I don't want to make fun of them, but it's just interesting that I'm the one that they were picking on.
Right.
I'm still married to my wife 39 years later.
He also called her out because this whole thing started because she failed to read the lyrics of the Prince album before she listened to it with her little kid.
Sure.
And he's like, I've always read the lyrics or listened to an album before I've shared it with my kids.
That's a parent's job.
I've always done this. And like he goes, even like when Tenacious D's first album came out, he said his whole family loved it, but he made a version of it without one of the songs.
I know it's
I'll bet you do. for his kids. So they could enjoy Tenacious D, but they weren't ready for this other song. Dee Snider's basically one of the top heroes of this, if not the top hero of this whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And do you remember we met him, kind of said hi?
Oh, wait, where was that?
The Whatever Show with Alexis and Jennifer.
Right.
He was on at the same time as us.
That's right.
Yep, because he was in Rock of Ages, so he was on promoting
that. I totally forgot about that.
It was wonderful.
One of them was Martha Stewart's daughter?
Alexis was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yep.
Totally forgot about that whole thing.
You did?
Yeah. Oh. Madonna, Dress You Up.
Yeah, Madonna, if you read quotes from her about this, she's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
It's like a Tuesday for me.
The band Wasp, if you remember them.
We Are Sex Perverts is what Wasp stands for.
Oh, really?
They were like a proto-Guar kind of. And please don't kill me if you're a Guar fan and I'm way off. It makes sense to outsiders.
Did that really stand for that, or was that like Kids in Satan Service?
No, that's what it stood for.
Okay.
They were like, it was like a big stage show and like human
Blackie
bones.
Blackie Lawless, right?
Yes.
And I remember he wore a cod piece that shot out, it was wired to pyrotechnics and like shot sparks out.
There was also a cod piece with like a saw, I think a chainsaw on it.
Okay.
Kind of like a presaged that whole horrible scene in Seven.
But I think
the way he was approaching it was a little more funny and just kind of lighthearted than the Seven one. Good Lord.
So their song Animal, Sex, Language, and Violence, it covered all three. But not a cult.
No a cult. Def Leppard, High and Dry, parentheses Saturday Night, is about drinking.
Okay.
All right. And they even said, like, yeah, it's about drinking. People like to have fun on Saturday night sometimes, you know? Merciful Fate, Into the Coven. And I think that was King Diamond's band originally.
Yes, he was Merciful Fate singer.
So theirs was a cult, and it was like overtly occult stuff, like come serve Satan with me. It's fun. Kill your parents kind of thing.
Yeah.
But don't really, you little psychotic 16-year-old. This is not for real.
This is just music, and I'm trying to sell records by painting my face.
Plus also, one of the other points that I think a lot of people made too was, you're not going to find Merciful Fate's Into the Coven on Casey Kasem's Top 40.
No.
Ever. Like, you would really have to go find this thing.
Yeah, there were no songs on the radio.
And even if you do find it, well, then if your kid's listening to Merciful Fate, have a conversation with your kid about what they're listening to and what Merciful Fate's saying and just how real or non-real it is.
Yeah.
Engage your child.
And also, you will not be the one parent in the history of the world that stops your child from listening to or watching something that they want to listen to or watch.
Yeah.
When it's impossible.
When License to Ill came out, I knew like every word on the album front to back. And one of them, I was like singing it out loud to my parents about smoking that dust at St. Anthony's Feast.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, it was funny. They didn't say anything immediately, but they did look at each other. And like a day or two later, they approached me and they're like, Josh, you know that song, that Beastie Boys song where they're talking about smoking dust? Are they talking about angel dust, PCP? And I was like, I don't know, probably. And they're like, you can't listen to that anymore.
Yeah. But that's one of the points, though, that Ed makes in this article is that like a kid probably doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think research has even shown that lyrically, people are more prone to bring their own experience into something,
mm-hmm.
especially a kid.
Well, also, I legitimately remember, I can put myself back at that time, and hearing that, I wasn't like, huh, angel dust, huh? Maybe I'll give that a try.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks,
Ad
Rock. That's a great idea. I really didn't think like that.
No. You know?
And I think most people don't. Ironically, if you're under the influence of angel dust, then lyrics are super suggestive.
Probably so.
But you have to do the angel dust first.
Sabbath's Trashed, obviously about drugs and alcohol.
That's not Osborne or Dio Sabbath either.
It's not either one of those?
No.
Who was it?
Ian Gillam?
No, I don't even know.
I had to look him up. It's fine. It sounds a bit like a little more melodic Motorhead.
Okay.
It sounds Motorhead-y. It's not my kind of Sabbath.
Mary Jane Girls, In My House. I don't know anything about that.
Dude, that's been in my head all day.
Yeah, I don't know that group.
It's a good song.
Is it? What is it?
In My House.
Is it rap or is it?
In My House.
Well, that doesn't clue me in anymore.
You've heard
the
song before. It's not rap. It's the Mary Jane Girls. They were like a girl group that Rick James put together.
Oh, okay.
Super 80s, like sexy. It's fine. It wouldn't. You would not bat an eyelash over it today.
Right. Venom? Possessed?
Never heard of them.
A cult?
Okay.
And then finally...
this is great.
Cyndi Lauper with her very famous masturbation song, Shebop.
So you knew it was about masturbation?
No.
Okay, I didn't either.
Until I read the words today, and I'm like, oh, well, that's about masturbation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said that she
like
felt
clearly.
A bop a day kept the doctor away, so she was recommending it, and that's why she made that song. I got the impression she's a little embarrassed as an adult for having
about
released
song?
That song, but not apologetic.
No. Cyndi Lauper apologizes to no man.
We saw a show of hers once. She's good.
A concert?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to that Halloween party of hers one time.
No.
In the 90s. She has a big Halloween bash every year at her place in New York. And my friend John Abraham was a member of the fan club, and I think he could get like early tickets or something.
Oh, that's cool.
So he got us all tickets, and we went, and I met Cyndi Lauper.
She's cool.
Partied at her Halloween party, which was so much fun.
She's she spends a lot of time and money like helping out LGBTQ youth who've been kicked out onto the street by
their
parents.
Great.
Yeah. It's like a legitimately great person.
Yeah, she's totally.
And talented too.
Very much so.
She bop, Cyndi. She bop.
That's right. So that's the Filthy 15. That's what they trotted out. And this is when I guess we need to get in a little bit to the fact that it seems sort of okay, even me as a parent now, to be like, well, you know what? There's nothing wrong with a rating system.
Right.
Because as a parent, you want to know what's going on, and that just helps us. That's a bit of shorthand for us.
Sure.
But it wasn't a voluntary thing, because very soon what started happening is they started, people started doing interviews and on the PMRC, people in the government, and it was clear that they were trying to get rid of this stuff.
Well, yes.
Like, get it out of stores.
Ed puts it like—
drive them out of business.
Yeah, kind of. That, like, we have— they have different views than ours. We don't like it.
Yep.
They considered themselves the moral majority, which was ascendant thanks to a pact with Ronald Reagan. They helped get Reagan elected, and Reagan, like, made the Christian right very prominent in powerful in American politics in the 80s. And there, I read this. One of my favorite things to do, Chuck, when we're researching stuff like this is to read contemporary articles at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know the outcome, and they also know tons right. of details that get lost to time over history. But I was reading this, like, long-form LA Times article about this whole thing, mm-hmm. written right smack dab in the middle of it. And they quoted this one guy who was like, this is part of a movement. Like, everybody's looking at it like— it's just about censoring records. They're like, no, these same people tried to get rid of The Last Temptation of Christ.
Right.
They tried to get funding pulled for the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Yeah.
This is like part of a larger thing that they're trying to do, and they're trying to sanitize American popular culture to their tastes. And what you were saying, I think, is that in interviews and at the Senate hearings, some of the people on the PMRC side, including PMRC members, basically said, like, yeah, we're trying to censor this, which it's one thing if you go into it saying that, because then the people who are opposed to you know where you stand.
Yeah.
But the PMRC, their whole position, they talked out of both sides of their mouth. And one of the side that they said the loudest was, we're not trying to censor anything. We're trying to get the record industry to do this voluntarily.
Yeah.
We just
like
happen
to be—
we're
a private group.
Right. We just happen to be married to these senators and these congressmen and, like, these right. cabinet members. And that has nothing to do with anything. But if you look at the context of everything, it's voluntary, but if you don't do it, we're going to put you out of business, or we're going to have the government do it. And that is censorship. It's also unconstitutional. When the government gets into that, that's unconstitutional. And probably every single law like this would have been thrown right out by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, which is one big reason why this wasn't a law. There mm-hmm. was never legislation proposed. It was always voluntary from a private group mm-hmm. to a corporation.
But Frank Zappa at those hearings said, well, wait a minute. If this has nothing to do with legislation,
yeah.
if this has nothing to do with law, why are we holding Senate hearings on a private group trying to get a private action, voluntary yeah. action undertaken? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And he really revealed, like, the theater behind the whole thing.
Oh,
got
sure.
rid of all the set dressing and showed it for what it was, which was a stab at censorship.
This guy, Jeff Ling, part of the PMRC, said, do I think it should be out of stores? Sure I do. I think labeling will do that. Another PMRC member, Sally Nebius, said, we want the industry to police itself. If they refuse, we're going to look into legal ways to stop what we feel is contributing to the delinquencies of minors. Pat Boone very famously said, that's what the Constitution had in mind, self-imposed, majority-approved censorship. Mm. So, I mean, they were blatant about it. About the fact that not only were they trying to legislate morality, if it came push came to shove, they would try and do that.
Right.
But to Pat Boone, straight up saying, like, yeah, if the majority wants it, sure, censor art, mm-hmm. which is just really scary.
It is scary. There was a woman named Judith Toth who introduced legislation in Maryland for record labeling. And she apparently told Frank Zappa to stop worrying about civil rights.
Yeah.
Which is not a phrase you want to go down in history as famously saying.
Yeah, and Frank Zappa is the last person you want to say that to. Okay. You know, Vince Neil probably would have been like, all right,
yeah,
fine.
Sure.
Where's the Jack Daniels?
Right.
And even there was a senator, a Democratic senator there named James Exon uh-huh. of Nebraska, and he even said, like, what are we doing here?
Well, okay, and I was like, hero. Guy's a hero for saying that.
No, not a hero for saying that.
He wanted to know because he was in favor of censoring.
Yeah, but he was like, there was no legislation on the floor. Like, why is it here in front of the Commerce Committee?
Right. I took it to mean, like, he was like, well, what are this is inappropriate then. This is not right. But no, he was like, well, I thought we were here to censor things, it turns out. Yeah. If you watch the Frank Zappa testimony, it happens in the first couple minutes, that whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I watched a lot of this. Well, I watched it back in the day some, too. But rewatched some of it.
Mm-hmm.
John Denver was great. He was the one, he had the most impact of everyone because I think they thought John Denver was going to come in there and
Pat Boone,
Mr. Squeaky Clean, yeah, and Pat Boone it up, mm-hmm. and he came out hard on a couple of things. He was like, first of all, you think my song Rocky Mountain High is about smoking dope?
Right.
It's not. Like, you're wrong. I wrote it. It's about feeling the euphoria of nature.
Mm-hmm. In the Rockies, specifically.
And, yeah, in the Rockies and Colorado. And not only that, but you shouldn't be doing this. And they were like, wait, we called you in here because we thought you might be friendly to our committee.
A2 Denver.
And he said, hey, I am friendly. I'm John Denver. But you shouldn't be doing this.
And they all clapped. It's funny, if you watch the Frank Zappa testimony, they introduce him, and my brain was like waiting for applause and like cheers, and I was like, oh yeah, it's a Senate hearing.
Right.
They don't do that there.
They only applaud themselves.
But so yeah, let's pause for a second here and point something out, Chuck. We just talked about a Senate hearing where John Denver, Frank Zappa, and Dee Snider from Twisted Sister testified. That's a pretty significant Senate hearing.
In the 80s it is.
It really is. I think it is. I think it's landmark now. So you want to talk a little more about the hearings and then we'll take a break in a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the guy who's most frequently, actually all three of them are, but Frank Zappa really kind of laid it down. He brought Moon Unit and Dweezil with him. And they were, I don't know if they got to testify, but they came so that they could testify as concerned teens who were worried about their free speech.
Yeah.
And Frank Zappa really pointed it out. He said that, first of all, I think this is the parents' concern, not the government's concern. And that I've got four children. Two of them are here. That was Moon Unit and Dweezil. I just like saying both of their names. I want them to grow up in a country where they can think what they want to think, be what they want to be, and not what somebody's wife or somebody in government makes them be, which is pretty wise words.
Yeah.
Although he does say, there's a little watchword in there, wife. Wife got thrown around a lot during this from the opposing side. And it just danced along the edge of being denigrating, I think. Like, you're a Washington wife. Go stay in your lane.
Oh, right.
Don't worry about big stuff like this. You know, it almost kind of smacked of it whenever it came up. Washington wives or ladies. It just seemed just kind of denigrating here or there. Go back and listen. You'll see it.
I heard it, but I had a different take than you did.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And Frank Zappa actually was mislabeled too later. He had a word lyric-free instrumental album that was tagged with explicit lyric.
Yeah. Because somebody in a record store was like, oh, yeah,
Frank Zappa
testified against the PMRC.
Man, it's so sad what's going on with his family.
What's going on with his family?
Just infighting.
Oh, really?
Divided sides, suing each other.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's awful.
Are Moon Unit and Dweezil on the same side or opposing sides?
I believe, oh, man, I went down the rabbit hole on this not too long ago. I think Dweezil and Ahmet are completely on opposite sides.
Oh, no.
And I think Ahmet and the mom have control of...
I think the mom's dead.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I think they're in control of the catalog.
Okay.
And we're like, you can't play dad's music anymore. Huh. And so I think Dweezil and Moon, I think, are on one side. And there's another sister.
Uh-huh.
But yeah,
Sally?
I mean, it's a complete house divided.
That's sad.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
It's all money.
All right, let's take a break because I'm bummed out now. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get.
I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Learning things with Chuck and Josh,
stuff you should know. All right, we're back. We shook off the whole Zappa drama. Well, now it's back again.
So part of the problem here with these stickers was, and is, that, there's a few things. First of all, what we've been talking about with misinterpreting these lyrics, you've got somebody else deciding, well, this is what this person meant when they wrote it.
Mm.
So it deserves a sticker, whether it's John Denver or Twisted Sister with their song Under the Blade was about, you know, the guitarist for that band was having throat surgery mm-hmm. and was scared.
Mm-hmm.
So Dee Snider wrote a song about the being scared going into surgery and going under the blade.
Right.
And they thought it was a song about like killing people with a knife.
Exactly.
So that's a big problem.
That's a big problem in and of itself. Well, you get past that by training somebody, right? I mean, you find an elite group of people who have all studied comparative literature extensively, probably have doctorates in it, and you pay them a significant amount of money to work at each record label to go through the songs that come out and decide which ones deserve a label.
Yeah, the 30, 40,000 songs that come out each year.
Right. That's what you do, and that's what they did, right?
No.
Okay, they didn't. I knew they didn't.
No, and it's funny to go back to that Under the Blade thing. Dee Snider very famously was like, That's not about BDSM. That is all in Tipper Gore's mind, apparently.
Well,
Al got mad.
Yeah.
He got really mad.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah. He was livid
in
at
the series?
Hearing.
In the hearing?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that part.
Yeah. He was really ticked off at Dee Snider.
So, yeah, Dee Snider said that, and that became kind of a talking point on the opposing side was like basically painting Tipper Gore as like this lascivious, like
dirty-minded
like,
lady,
like pent-up housewife who like couldn't stop herself from talking about BDSM and things
yeah.
like that. And then not just Tipper, but also some of the other people, they were kind of painted as people who were just basically getting off on talking about this stuff on the Today Show or Good Morning America.
Yeah,
which like just brings them right up to the line between like earnestness and performance art. And like they were almost saying like these people are like putting you on almost.
Yeah.
Because I mean the idea that somebody's walking around getting off on it is just such a cartoonish
yeah.
Freudian sketch of a person but this is where the talking points were on both sides.
Yeah.
Prince is talking about Darling Nikki masturbating. All you want to do is talk about masturbating in the mass media.
Right.
And it was basically verbatim quotes is what I just said.
Well, I mean, that's the irony of it all is the word masturbated probably not been used that much in public, like ever.
Right.
Then because of these hearings.
And certainly not
PMRC.
On like, not on Good Morning America or anything like that, but it was the very people who were decrying it who were the ones that were bringing it to the masses.
Oh, dear. A few more songs. Ozzy's Suicide Solution song, which is anti-suicide about alcoholism was mm-hmm. promoted by the PMRC as a suicide encouraging song.
Right.
So they're just getting it all wrong.
They are. So, okay. So you've got a subjective thing. By definition, judging lyrics and interpreting them is pretty subjective.
100% subjective.
You're not going to go to the trouble of training people to do this job correctly.
Right.
At least you're going to come up with a set of coherent criteria and guidelines that can be applied across the board, right?
No. No, they didn't do any of that. And it wasn't applied across the board because mm-hmm. in the end, and this was a survey in Portland, Oregon only.
In 1994.
But let's say we could extrapolate this across the country. 8% of CDs and cassettes total had parental advisory stickers, 59% of rap albums, 13% heavy metal, 1% mainstream pop, mm-hmm. and no country albums had stickers.
Which is pretty rich considering there's a guy named David Allan Coe yeah. and Hank Jr. and yeah. Walk Tosh and all that.
All they sang about was drinking and doing drugs.
And getting in fights and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Sex, violence.
And drugs and drinking.
Yep.
Yep. And they had zero parental advisory. So that smacked of a lot. And again, that's an extremely narrow sample. Record stores in Portland, Oregon. But it gets across some people's points on the opposing side. Like, no, this isn't about like values. It's about what they're threatened by.
Yeah.
And they're threatened by like rap music and heavy metal. They're okay with everything else. And this is proof positive of that.
They probably didn't even run the country songs through the process.
Sure.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah.
I'm sure they just targeted groups, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So finally, like we said, the IAA had already decided pre-hearing that they were going to do this. And they said, all right, we're going to figure this out. Should just take us about 5 years. And what the plan may have been was like, maybe this will all just go away.
I think that was part of it. But I think also they realized that like they were going to have to it would stem off that legislation, and it worked.
Yeah.
If you read some of the contemporary reports with legislators who brought legislation to their state houses, they say, well, since they agreed to play ball, we're rescinding our bill. But we've got it over here if they don't end up playing ball after all.
Yeah.
So it really did work.
Oh, yeah.
But they did it like a couple of days or a couple of weeks before the Commerce Committee voted on the tape tax.
Yeah.
And the RIAA didn't get their tape tax.
No, they did not. But what did happen was those stickers in March of 1990 started coming out. I remember going to the store and seeing those for the first time.
Oh, I got to buy that one.
Well, that's kind of what happened too in some cases.
Do you know what the first album that had the first sticker was?
Was there a first album?
If you could guess, yes. If you could guess what album that came out in 1990... Just guess who would have gotten the first explicit lyrics.
Oh, man.
Sticker.
I don't know. Jane's Addiction?
Two Live Crew.
Oh, of course.
Band in the USA was the first album to get an explicit lyric sticker.
Yeah. And so, you know, these stickers started coming out and it had a ripple effect in a big way, but in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Everything from Steven Tyler getting on stage and saying, thank you, Tipper Gore, because you throw some four-letter words on an album and now you're going to get another million in sales.
Right.
Because kids were looking to buy those records.
It's forbidden fruit.
All the way to the other side of the coin, which is Walmart or certain states saying, we're not even going to carry these records.
That was part of it.
In stores.
It also became an easy target for local law enforcement that decided that they were going to enact their own laws.
Right.
Like in Broward County, Florida, which is around Miami, Miami is, the Broward County Sheriff sent out some deputies with their badges, full uniform, to go by record stores and said, hey, just wanted to give you a friendly little heads up. If you guys sell any more of those Two Live Crew albums, we're going to arrest you.
Yeah.
We don't want to, but we wanted to give you a heads up first. Two Live Crew found out about it and were like, that's prior restraint on free speech.
Yeah.
And they won. They won in the Supreme Court, actually. But this kind of thing, it was like, as the Grabster put it, the censors were emboldened by the response from the PMRC's idea.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And these labels were, hey, go after these guys. And not just the records. Like when artists came to town, they would get arrested for their performances. In 1989, 9 performers were arrested in Georgia alone for their concerts.
Yeah.
From Bobby Brown to Gene Simmons.
Yeah, and that's what Dee Snider and that sort of 30 years later thing said is, you know, it worked in one way because they sequestered, which is maybe all they wanted, was they sequestered a certain group of artists from the rest.
Yep.
And that sequestration, like you said, ranged from now they're following where they're touring and cops are going to show up there to Walmart saying, no, not going to carry this unless you change this album cover or this lyric or the song title to something ridiculous. Like Nirvana's song Rape Me was very famously changed on the album, the title, to Waif Me.
Nothing about the song.
But they didn't change the song itself. No. But if you look on the back of that In Utero album cover, it says Waif Me.
But it's even like crossed out and then written in Sharpie, Waif.
It's not, but it should have been. So it, you know, it had a big ripple effect in a lot of ways. People were, and I guess before this, they had always had radio safe versions of some songs.
Well, yeah, you just weren't going to get radio play.
Right. But now it's like the albums need to be like radio safe. Like, you listen to in your home.
Or else Walmart won't sell them or whatever. That's a big retailer. It was even back then.
Yeah.
So there was a negative, that slippery slope that the PMRC had carried the nation across, we started to slide down it. And actual legitimate censorship took place as a result.
Yeah.
And then the way that all of this happened, the way it was able to happen, was because there was a gatekeeper, there was a funnel for the record industry to the public. And the PMRC was able to go to them and say, you've got something, we've got something you want, you got something we want, we're going to make this happen.
Yeah.
And just by the fact that the record industry is not like it was back then, they're no longer the gatekeepers. Like if you make music, you can sell directly to your fans. You've got some, you know, a few digital platforms that do some kind of explicit stuff and or labeling or something.
They're still there.
It's there. And I think if you still can buy a record, I didn't know anybody still bought like physical CDs or whatever, but it can still come with a sticker. But it's just changed. It's just different. And if you listen to stuff today and then you listen to that Filthy 15, you're like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the PMRC went and put their finger in a dike that didn't even really need it. And in doing so, they exploded and the flood just came and overwhelmed them.
Yeah.
And just by the number of songs that were released and the amount of just filthiness that was attendant in those songs, it became normalized.
Yeah.
Rather than the exact opposite, which is what the PMRC was working for.
Yeah, and what didn't happen is our generation, which was the generation of the 70s and 80s, it turns out we did not grow up to just be a bunch of degenerates. Well, that was going to be the ruin of our country.
It's true, though.
Because of music.
And I think that is ultimately like what parents tell themselves they're really worried about is that their kid is going to become morally unhygienic and the country will go down the hill one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it just doesn't seem to pan out ever, despite it being such an ongoing and old worry, you know?
Jazz was going to be the end of moral society. Then rock and roll.
Yeah, it's true. Although I have to say the PMRC did give us Glenn Danzig's song Mother, which is apparently an ode to Tipper Gore and the PMRC.
Oh, really?
If you go and read the lyrics, you're like, oh, okay.
PMRC was in a bunch of songs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those four letters appeared in a lot of rock and roll songs, hip-hop songs.
Yeah.
They got a lot of attention, and maybe that's all they wanted.
Well, we just gave them some more.
Well, they're no longer around. They broke up the band in the 90s.
And do you know when? Do you know when Tipper quit?
95?
No, 92 when her husband became vice president.
Yeah. And then now you can see her sitting in with the Grateful Dead on drums.
Smoking grass.
Who never did
All
drugs.
She talks about is grass now. If you want to know more about the PMRC, well, I don't think there is anything more to know, but go look around, read some contemporary articles. It's fun. And since I said contemporary articles, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this short and sweet. Remember in the olive oil episode, I said something about Greeks and Italians, like what's the difference? Yeah. I got support on that.
Okay.
From a Greek gentleman. Apparently, it's a thing. He said, I think you'll be pleased, Chuck, to find out that you didn't offend anyone when you said Greeks and Italians are the same. In fact, there's actually a phrase, una faccia, una razza, or in Greek, mia fazza, mia razza, meaning one face, one race, often used to express the perception of close cultural affinities between Greeks and Italians.
Oh, neat.
Keep up the good work, guys. That is from Nick Kontos.
Well done, Chuck.
And I bet you Nick Kontos is Greek.
I'm good. Hey, does it matter?
Yeah,
it
doesn't.
Well, thanks a lot, Nick. That was a very nice email to send to support Chuck because I left him hanging high and dry. If you want to get in touch with us, you can go onto our website, stuffyoushouldknow.com, and you'll find our social links all over the place. I also have a website called thejoshclarkway.com, and you can send me, Chuck, and Jerry an email at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.